she is still a woman with all her feelings, with all her needs and wants, but she's sacrificing everything for the sake of a family. She's shaping a family by paying the price of her youth, her energy, and all the effort that she can put in life.
Yes, I would say we should remember this, that always remember this. A woman's heart breaks not from exhaustion. She did all that throughout the day. It does not break from exhaustion. It rather breaks from invisibility.
How can we know their value better and admire and have the appreciation for their job, for their responsibility? Even let's not call it a job.
Yeah, I would say act her one day. Be a mom one day. I would say, like, for example, if say to her one day that you stay aside, let me do your chores. I remember, like, when I was traveling somewhere and my husband did the chores, he told me the moment I was making the breakfast and the drop of oil suddenly stuck my skin and I was burned. I was like, how do you manage to stay here for the whole day? So see, I would say act her one day, be her one day. And the mothers themselves, I would say to them, do not let world define you by the title. By some title. You don't need that. You literally don't need that. Because angels record every crumb that you pick up in silence. You don't need the world to give you rewards.
Well, that was all the time we had for today's Muslim Lady. Until another episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Swing across the seven skies. See a pure heart never lies. The words you learn will never earn. It's time to think. Wonder why stars above will always be a shining guide for us to see. And when I doubt, I'll have no doubt, but still I wonder why. Digging through our pages past, wondering how the truth will last. God's in control is what I found. I think I'll try this time around and know what really feels the path I seek. And no one's gonna care as much as me.
Good night to all listeners of Iran Radio. This is Tehran, the Iranian capital, and I'm Asma, your presenter for the next hour. We start this hour's lineup with our varied radio productions feature. That will be followed by Insight into the Holy Quran. The program presents a short exegesis or explanation of the ayahs of the Holy Quran. And we round up this hour's programs with Islamic laws. The program focuses on Islamic laws and adopts a practical approach to the subject. Stay with us for the next hour.
Throughout history, mosques have always been serene havens for Muslim worshippers. Magnificent buildings have developed significantly during the years, and their unique and one-of-a-kind architecture has fascinated people throughout history. Iran is adorned with glorious mosques that invite you to a divine feast of colors, each reflecting the genius of their architect and the amount of skill and proficiency that goes into each and every detail. In Tehran, mosques are found on nearly every street corner, making it easy for Muslims to attend the daily prayers. The Imam Khomeini Mosque, located right inside the Tehran Bazaar, is one of the oldest structures in the city, dating back to the early 18th century. People in different parts of the bazaar have easy access to the courtyard, and so many retreat to this calm shelter for their daily prayers. Inside the mosque, one is spellbound by the amount of color that has gone into the intricate tiles decorating all the arches and niches. The elaborate geometric designs that adorn the walls and ceilings are also something to reflect on.
The architecture of mosques in the country vary from one region to another, depending on culture, heritage, and the resources available. Now, these buildings are different from each other in terms of color, the various symbolic patterns, and the different styles of tile work. But there are a few common elements that most of these mosques share with each other.
One of the common features of every mosque is the mihrab, a niche in the wall that indicates the direction towards which Muslims pray. Although the mihrab varies in size, they all have intricate arabesque and calligraphic designs made by joining numerous cut glazed tiles.
Beautiful pools have always been an inseparable part of the mosque because water is known for its purity, brightness, and transparency. Water has always been associated with the divine and also known as a purifying element.
The history of tile work in Iran goes back to the prehistoric period, but it was in the Islamic era that this unique art flourished and became the most important decorative feature of religious buildings. For Muslims, these floral patterns in distinctive colors, especially turquoise, deep blues, and rich reds, represent the infinite and convey a sense of spirituality.
Dignified, magnificent, and impressive, the architecture of the mosques in Tehran reflect creativity and beauty. Every tiny little detail creating an atmosphere of holiness and spirituality.
Apart from the floral designs, exceptional calligraphy works are also displayed on these tiles. Calligraphy is closely linked to geometry because the proportions of the letters are all governed by mathematics. Most mosques have some type of service inscription, which might be a verse from the Quran, lines of poetry, or names and dates. Sometimes a single word, such as Allah or Muhammad, are repeated and arranged into patterns over the entire surface of the walls. The two other common features in most mosques are the minarets and domes. Minarets are tall towers that not only provide a visual focal point, but are also used for the call to prayer. Domes are also one of the signature forms in Islamic architecture, symbolically representing the vault of heaven.
One of the well-known mosques in Tehran's Chariati Street is Husseiniyeh Ershad, which was built half a century ago. This mosque is well known for all the political and historical events that happened here during the course of the years.
Our way of living changes as the years go by, but some things in life stay the same. People come, people go, but they remain standing. The architecture of the mosques in Iran is part of eternity, echoing the glorious image of God in its every detail and corner. Hoda Lizgi for Iran.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, hello and welcome. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at some of the contents of Surah Ankabut. Brothers and sisters, now let's listen to the 45th verse of Surah Ankabut.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
Utlu ma
أوحي إليك من الكتاب وأقم الصلاة إن الصلاة تنهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر ولذكر الله أكبر والله يعلم ما تصنعون.
Recite, O Muhammad, what has been revealed to you of the book and establish prayer. Indeed, prayer prohibits immorality and wrongdoing, and the remembrance of Allah is greater, and Allah knows that which you do.
So, dear listeners, this verse starts another section for us in our interpretation, in our discussion about this surah Ankabut. So, this section, which could be called the fifth section of this chapter based on the different topics that have been mentioned, could be called the section that talks about how to argue in the best way possible. So, and this is the beginning of part 21 of the Quran, which is the Holy Quran is 30 parts or 30 juz, but this is the beginning of the 21st juz of the Quran. So it says, "Utlu ma uhiya ilayka min al-kitab." Recite that which has been revealed to you of the book. وَأَقِمِ الصَّلَاةِ, and establish prayer. إِنَّ الصَّلَاةَ تَنْهَى عَنِ الْفَحْشَاءِ وَالْمُنْكَرِ. Verily, prayer keeps one away from indecency and evil. وَلَذِكْرُ اللَّهِ أَكْبَرُ, and certainly the remembrance of Allah is greater. وَاللَّهُ يَعْلَمُ مَا تَصْنَعُونَ, and Allah knows what you do. So in this verse, Almighty Allah's command to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam for reciting the Quran and establishing the prayer have come beside each other, and it is for the sake that Quran and prayer are two strengthening sources of actually power and iman and strength. So Allah, who informs his Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam of a heavy responsibility, tells him to take help from two strengthening sources to perform his heavy responsibility. So you see, if you are having a heavy responsibility, you should provide the one who is responsible with something with the items, with the materials needed. You cannot expect from one to do something magically, but yet not grant him with what he deserves, what he needs in the very first place. So the Holy Quran in this verse says that if you want to be the Prophet, if you want to do your responsibility, what you need is two things. One is the recitation of the Quran, "Utlu ma uhiya min al-kitab," and then establishing prayers. "Aqimi al-salah."
"Utlu ma uhiya ilayka min al-kitab wa aqimi al-salah." والله يعلم ما تصنعون.
So, dear listeners, this verse, as we said, is saying that the Almighty Allah is informing the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam that you have a heavy responsibility, and you have to take help from these two strengthening sources for performing your heavy responsibility. Recitation of the Quran and establishing prayers. Utlu ma uhiya ilayka min al-kitab, recite that which has been revealed to you of the book, wa aqimi as-salah, and establish the prayer. But at the end of different parts of the life story of the former nations and the actually great prophets, the unpleasant manner of those nations with those divine leaders and the painful end of their lives, in order to comfort and actually console the Prophet ﷺ, and actually for strengthening his spirit, for showing a actually general and conclusive policy, the Quran, addressing the Prophet, commands him, and at first says, recite that which has been revealed to you of the book. أُتُلُ مَا أُوحِيَ إِلَيْكَ مِنَ الْكِتَابِ. So the Prophet ﷺ is commanded to recite these verses because whatever he wants is found in them. Knowledge and wisdom, advice, admonition, the criterion of the cognition of the right and wrong, the means of actually enlightening the heart and spirit, the path of every group and people to move along, they are all in the Holy Quran mentioned implicitly and mostly explicitly. Only it depends on the one to ponder over the verses. So the Prophet ﷺ should recite it and apply it in his life, recite it and be inspired by it. He should recite it, he should enlighten his heart by the light of its recitation. That's why we are highly recommended in many hadith, in many traditions, to recite Quran on a daily basis, to keep ourselves in touch with the Holy Quran. Now, next to this command, which is indeed an instructive one, it pays to the second command, which is the main branch of education. وَأَقِمِ الصَّلَاةِ, and establish the prayer. We'll talk more about this part of the verse in the next episode, God willing. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the unwind all the secrets, this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me.
You kill in the name of freedom. You kill in the name of democracy. You kill in the name of God. But not in my name will you kill. Is it not enough what you've done with all the bloodshed you've caused? Yet your greed drives you on. In your brutal race for acquisition, no land is left untouched. Driven by a vile ambition to have the whole world in your clutch. Every single new addition to your slave colony does nothing to dull your ambition to leave no nation free. It is indeed a sad condition that you suffer from, this itching desire for a prime position to have all under your thumb. Not in my name will you fight. Not in my name will you kill. Never. Never. against your evil methods of violence and intimidation, against your hijacking and misinterpretation of my peaceful faith and revelation. I shout with billions in this demonstration. Not in my name will you fight. Not in my name will you kill. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you pray. Not in my name will you dare to speak again. Not in our name. Not in our name.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest and speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We're going to actually begin discussing some of the jurisprudential laws related to prayer and whatever actually hovers around the prayer and the questions and concepts related to that. Based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei, let me begin our session with this question regarding ostentation or riya.
Right.
We all know that this is a kind of vice, ethical, you know, let's say a vice or quality that, you know, a few people are somehow engaged with or they are, let's say, suffering from. If a person is afflicted with riya or show-off,
yes,
in their worship, and they are now struggling with themselves to overcome this, let's say, vice, is this also counted as a form of riya, I mean, in their worship? Doesn't it depend on what kind of worship you are talking about, whether they are recommended or compulsory, for example? How can one keep away from it?
Right. Well, His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei has said that any action done for Allah, including fighting against riya, is not considered riya, because you are fighting, you are trying to uproot riya, to get rid of it.
Yes.
And in order to get rid of it, you do certain activities, you take certain actions. So that's not considered to be riya in legal parlance. To get rid of riya, one must think of the greatness of Almighty Allah, the weakness of his own soul, nafs.
Yes.
And also the weakness of other people's soul and nafs, and their dependence on Allah.
Yes.
And also his subservience to Allah, the Exalted. All of these things, if one realizes and perceives or comprehends the greatness of Allah in his own smallness or in his own insignificance, he will gradually get rid of riya, get rid of ostentation, or get rid of hypocrisy.
I see. Well, Another question regarding the prayer or worship is that when attending congregational prayers with the Sunni brothers and sisters, you would hear the word Amin, which is pronounced immediately after the imam finishes reciting the Fatiha. What's the Shia ruling on this?
Well, if it is required, let's say, by taqiyya, if taqiyya requires you to say Amin in the said situation, there is no problem in saying Amin. But if there is no such a circumstance in which you are required to do taqiyya, of course, it's not permissible to recite Amin because it's not part of the prayer. It's a kind of addition to the prayer, which we do not accept. Of course, as Sunni Muslims do say it, but we are not supposed to follow them in their suit, to follow suit and say the same thing.
I see. Yes. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
Followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Mohammed Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are speaking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to worship and prayer, according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, in our obligatory prayers, is it allowed to say some of the words of the Fatiha or of another chapter, let's say, or a dhikr in a loud voice in order to warn a child, for example, who's doing something dangerous or doing something harmful, for example, to himself or herself, or to make the occupants of the house aware of the situation so that they may remove the danger? In addition, what is the status of the person's prayers during which he, through some kinds of gestures of the hand or raising the eyebrows, informs another person of something or a danger or answers his question?
Okay. Well, if the raising of the voice which reciting a verse or zikr for the purpose of warning others does not cause an individual to lose the status of being in prayer, then there is no objection to doing so. It is it's permissible, provided that the recitation and the zikr are done with the intention of recitation and zikr, and not with the intention and recitation to warn other people. Okay, the intention is very important. So if moving the hand or eyebrows or eye is brief and does not ruin the necessary composure and stillness of the prescribed form of the prayer, it would not lead to the invalidation of that prayer. So it's okay if you can do so. If you can raise your voice and alarm someone, you should do so. It's okay.
I see.
Because the composure and the structure of the prayer is not invalidated. It's not destroyed.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But if that's not sufficient, you can recite a word of the Hamd and Surah and a loud voice, provided that the recitation and zikr are done with the intention of recitation and with the intention of zikr.
I see. Does the passing of hands over the face after the qunut invalidate the prayer? And in case of the prayer being actually rendered as void as a result of this act, is it also considered a sin?
No, it's not considered a sin. You know, it does not invalidate the prayer, because you do nothing. You just pull your hands over your face, or one of your hands over your face. The religious authorities, including His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, have said that it is discouraged. It's makruh to pull your hand over your face after you finish or complete the qunut. This is done by Sunni Muslims, but we are not supposed to do the same thing, okay? It is, according to scholars, abominable, undesirable, and discouraged.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Shetovit. Let's take another break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad Hussein's program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are speaking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to worship and prayer according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, you know, in face of the hustle and bustle of city life and the modern life, actually, today, people find it pretty hard. Everybody actually does that, you know. They find it very hard to find peace and quiet and to stay or position your body and your mind in a meditative, let's say, a state.
Right.
Right? And when we are about to offer our prayers, we find lots of distractors.
Right.
Is it okay, is it permissible to close our eyes in order to avoid distractions?
Well, there is no Shari'i problem in shutting eyes or closing your eyes during prayer, although it is makruh to do so in other than ruku.
Mm-hmm.
The scholars have said, generally speaking, that it is makruh to close your eyes during prayers. You should use other methods to gain concentration during prayer. And of course, concentration is a big problem,
yes,
a big challenge. In this, as you rightly said, in this time and age in which people are running here and there in search of making money or
making ends meet. Yeah.
Yes. So they are actually distracted.
Mm.
So the thing is that the scholars have said that they should detach themselves from their businesses, from their occupation, from the worldly activities and worldly engagements.
Mm.
And for a few minutes, try to focus themselves on their prayers and what they recite, okay? If they continue to do this, if they continue to practice this for a while, then they will get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's necessary. It should be a continuous process to focus. If a person continuously focuses on his prayers and what he recites during prayer, he will get used to it, and he will not get distracted very easily.
You said it's considered actually makruh.
To shut your
reprehensible
eyes.
Reprehensible, except in sujood or ruku.
Ruku.
Ah, I see. Okay. As the last question, let me ask you this question also to include or squeeze in this episode at the end. Somebody asked us, during my prayers, I sometimes recall the spiritual heights and elevations that I experienced on days of the confrontation with the infidel Ba'athist army. And this helps me, increase my humility in prayers. Does this, or doing so, invalidate the prayers?
Well, it does not harm the validity of the prayer, because it's not considered to be one of the invalidating agents, okay?
Uh-huh.
So if one is recalls what he has experienced in the past during any bloody confrontations, whatever. Okay.
Yes.
So this just remembering those things and those spiritual heights will not definitely affect the validity of the prayer.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh. That was great. I love this program and I enjoyed it. And I hope that our dear audience would do so as well. And thank you for tuning in and listening to your own program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, whereby we try to delve into some of the jurisprudential laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. And in this episode, we try to, answer some of those questions related to worship and prayer. Thank you for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank
Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Good morning to all listeners from around the world. You're tuned in to Iran Radio, coming to you from Tehran, and I'm Asma, your host for the next hour. We start this hour's lineup with a radio productions feature. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the speeches of well-known and reputable Islamic scholars. After that, we have Around the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and far. Our varied radio productions feature will be next. And our final program this hour is A to Z of Life. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran as well as inspirational poetry and stories. Stay with us for the next hour.
That was the week that was. Beyond the headlines, we dissect the stories that shaped the past 7 days from the heart of region to the global stage. God, the compassionate, the merciful. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to our political chat show, That Was the Week, That Was. We look at global politics and issues of the day, and I'm your host, Leila Garcia. With me here in the studio is veteran journalist and political commentator, Miranda Akhshand. Please stay tuned. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much indeed.
Today's discussion is about two U.S. fighter jets entering Venezuelan airspace and flying over critical infrastructure amid heightened tensions in the region. The pair of U.S. Navy F-18 fighter jets flew over the Gulf of Venezuela, a body of water bounded by Venezuela and only about 115 miles at its widest point, and spent about 40 minutes inside Venezuelan airspace starting at around noon on Tuesday, 9 December 2025. A U.S. defense official, though, insisted that the jets stayed in international airspace during the flight. The United States has already deployed an estimated 15,000 to 16,000 troops near Venezuelan waters to pressure President Nicolas Maduro's government, and has previously sent a B-52 Stratofortress and B-1 Lancer bombers to the region, which flew up to and along the coast of Venezuela. Also, President Donald Trump bragged about seizing Venezuela's largest oil tanker during a White House press conference on Wednesday, December 10. Venezuela is one of the largest suppliers of oil to China, which has been the destination of between 55% and 90% of the country's oil exports. This week's seizure marks the first time the Trump administration has moved to interfere with the country's oil distribution amid the hostile pressure campaign. A Bloomberg report called the move a serious escalation. Speaking to reporters in the White House, Donald Trump said it's the largest one ever seized, and now other things are happening. Okay, let's bring in veteran journalist and political commentator Meron Derakhshan.
Thanks for inviting me.
My first question is, what more can you tell us about two fighter jets entering Venezuelan airspace?
Yes, this was an incident on Tuesday, 9th of December. Two U.S. fighter jets circled the Gulf of Venezuela for about 40 minutes. And the two aircraft flew just north of Maracaibo, one of Venezuela's most populous cities. According to American officials, the planes conducted a routine training flight similar to previous exercises, and the jets flew between two major regions for Venezuela's energy sector, including Lake Maracaibo, the cradle of reserves containing several billion barrels of crude oil. The waters are also regularly crossed by oil tankers and load and unload crude oil at refineries in the states of Zulia and Falcon that are key to the domestic fuel market in Venezuela and the nation's hydrocarbon sector. Mm-hmm. The city of Maracaibo in Zulia state is also the home to one of the main military air bases in western Venezuela.
Right. Trump administration has seized an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela. The operation was carried out by U.S. Coast Guard Force officials revealed on Wednesday, 10 December. Why did Trump order the seizure of the oil tanker?
Yes, that's right. As you said, U.S. forces have seized an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela, and this is meant to put pressure on President Nicolas Maduro's government.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And Pam Bondi, the U.S. Attorney General, posted footage about the seizure of the oil tanker on X. And this was a 45-second video which showed U.S. military forces landing on the oil tanker from a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
In an accompanying statement, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi said the FBI, Homeland Security investigations, and U.S. Coast Guard, with support from the Pentagon, had executed a seizure warrant for a crude oil tanker used to transport sanctioned oil from Venezuela.
Right.
Venezuelan government, however, says that the seizure constitutes a blatant theft and an act of international piracy. The Venezuelan government added, under these circumstances, the true reasons for the prolonged aggression against Venezuela have finally been revealed. It has always been about Venezuela's natural resources,
right,
in particular
true.
Venezuela's oil, mm-hmm. its energy sector, and the resources that belong to the Venezuelan people. But interestingly enough, the U.S. President Donald Trump said, he was asked what they're going to do with the oil tanker.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump said, I assume we're going to keep the oil. So that's very interesting.
All
Trump
right.
saying he's going to keep the oil, mm-hmm. which many people would interpret that as meaning that one of the key reasons why the United States is putting so much pressure on Venezuela for the past 4 months is precisely because of the oil. It wants to effectively take over control of Venezuela's oil.
Right.
Now, Attorney General Pam Bondi later expanded on Trump's statement that he's going to keep the oil. She said, we had executed a seizure warrant for a crude oil tanker, and this tanker was used to transport sanctioned Venezuelan oil. But despite this, many international observers are saying that this operation of taking over an oil tanker, it really is theft in broad daylight. So it's a complete violation of international laws, although, as Attorney General said, a U.S. court of law has ordered the seizure of oil tanker, but the oil belongs to Venezuela and not the United States. So I'm just wondering, Donald Trump's statement that I assume we're going to keep the oil, that's what Trump said.
Yeah.
Is that legal? Certainly not. It's not legal.
Yeah. How many people have been killed in a series of strikes against boats suspected of transporting drugs in the Caribbean Sea and Eastern Pacific? Are these strikes legal?
That's a good question. The U.S. military, according to the latest figures we have, has launched 22 strikes on alleged drug smuggling boats in both the Caribbean Sea and the Eastern Pacific Ocean, resulting in at least 87 deaths since early September.
Right.
And these are all classified as extrajudicial killings. And the Trump administration is targeting drug smugglers, allegedly, and the Pentagon has yet to release concrete evidence to the public that the vessels they're targeting with these airstrikes are actually carrying narcotics or drugs, and they actually do pose a threat to the United States. So far, we haven't seen anything from Pentagon to show any evidence that these boats are actually carrying drugs and narcotics.
That's true.
The latest we have is that Congress is now demanding or threatening to withhold funds from the Pentagon unless it sees unedited videos of these airstrikes.
Mm-hmm.
One particular airstrike has very much caught the attention of lawmakers in Congress. That was one of the very first on 2nd of September. Actually, we had an airstrike on a boat which totally destroyed the boat, but two people actually survived that first attack. They were clinging on to the wreckage of the boat. But then we had a second airstrike which killed those two people.
Yeah.
And some lawmakers in Congress have said this is a war crime because effectively the boat was totally destroyed and demolished by the first strike.
Right.
There was no need to carry out the second strike. So the political website Politico has interviewed Donald Trump, and Politico asked Trump whether he would consider using force against targets in other Latin American countries, not just Venezuela, in other regional countries as well. For example, Mexico and Colombia. And President Trump said, sure, I would. He said that if those countries, Mexico and Colombia, which are very active in drug trade, that he would consider airstrikes against those as well. So that's the latest we have.
I see. Donald Trump has warned that land attacks are coming soon to Venezuela, but has not offered any details on location. Tell us more about that.
Yes, this is the interview with the political website Politico. In this interview, Trump said that Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's days are numbered, and he declined to comment on whether the U.S. could send troops underground in Venezuela. Asked whether the U.S. could send in troops underground, Trump said, I don't want to comment on that. Pressed during the interview with Politico on how far he would go to take Nicolas Maduro out of office, Trump said, I don't want to go into the details of that. They asked him, do you want to see him out? Trump replied, his days are numbered. Asked again whether he would rule out a U.S. ground invasion of Venezuela, Trump said, I don't want to either rule it in or rule it out. So he left that sort of ambiguous. Tensions between the United States and Venezuela have soared in recent months, and the Trump administration has conducted various strikes on alleged drug boats in the Caribbean Sea and Eastern Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
And last month, President Trump suggested that the U.S. could very soon target Venezuelan drug traffickers on land inside Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
That was last month.
Yeah.
So that's the latest we have on that.
I see. Lawmakers are now demanding to get an edited video from the strikes, or else they will limit Pentagon's funding. Tell us more about that.
Yes, Congress is aiming to withhold part of U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's travel budget until the Pentagon hands over video footage of the airstrikes on alleged drug smuggling boats near Venezuela. This provision was tucked into the compromised version of the National Defense Authorization Act, an annual defense policy bill that has passed every year, and this has been so for the past six decades. Lawmakers unveiled the bill, which authorizes nearly $901 billion in defense spending.
Wow.
The bill is expected to pass both the House and the Senate, with bipartisan support.
Mm-hmm.
According to the latest we have, the lawmakers are threatening to withhold a quarter of Pete Hegseth's travel funds until the House and the Senate Armed Services Committees receive unedited videos of boat strikes conducted in the area of responsibility of the United States Southern Command. The provision also requires the Pentagon to turn over overdue reports, including on lessons learned from the Ukraine war, before the funds are released to the Pentagon. The requirement to release the video footage follows the revelation that two survivors of an initial boat strike on 2nd of September in the Caribbean Sea were killed in a follow-up strike on the same boat. Two sources familiar with the video of the airstrike said the two survivors were waving their hands and they were clinging on to the wreckage of the boat before they were killed in the second airstrike. Now, last Tuesday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Dan Kane, and the Secretary of State Marco Rubio briefed congressional leaders and the top intelligence committee members of the House and the Senate. Military officials briefed a small number of lawmakers on the incident on 2nd of September, and there are questions about the legality of that second strike on the boat which killed those two people, two survivors clinging on to the wreckage.
Right.
Some members of Congress were shown a video of the 2nd of September operation in last week's briefing, but the video has not been released publicly. And we know that the U.S. military have struck more than 20 alleged drug boats since early September, killing at least 87 people. President Trump initially said he would support release of the video footage about the second strike on that boat, which killed the two survivors. But later on, he seemed to backtrack on that promise.
Right.
Later on, Trump said, I don't know what they have. Whatever they have, we'll certainly release it, no problem. That's initially he said, whatever the Pentagon has, we'll release it, no problem. But on Monday, later on, Trump walked back on that promise. He said he was comfortable with whatever Pete Hegseth wants to do. So he said he was comfortable.
Right.
And Pete Hegseth actually said that he may not release the video of the second strike on the boat. He cited ongoing operations in the region. He said this is confidential. So Pete Hegseth suggested that he may not actually release that video.
Right. Listening to the Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran, English Radio. This program entitled, That Was the Week, That Was.